This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you're tuned in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Today on the show, it takes us to the world of esports. But first up, here's our weekly news roundup. One piece of news this week on the program, and a short, ugly one. As always, I have with me 2213's editor Harish Dio. Welcome back to the program. So just over the weekend, Selangor coach Bisa Naden hit back at fans who posted racist comments on social media after a 1-1 draw with Perak. Disgruntled fans took to various platforms to scrutinise Red Giants defender K. Prabhakaran, slamming the head coach for picking players his own race. Harish, what do you make out of this whole situation?
It is simply unacceptable and should not have happened. Some call it the views of the minority. Others said it was just social media posts. But when such racist views hog the limelight, it will only encourage more people to see things through a racial lens.
Should the onus be on the football clubs to manage their fans, doing things like tracking down and issuing bans to their respective fans?
There are laws in place and we should stop passing the buck. As publishers, we are all responsible for the content that appears on our platforms, including social media. And there must be some form of ground rules set which will allow fans to voice their views, but not when it comes to racist comments or other unsporting behaviour.
Trash talking, of course, is something that's part and parcel of the football culture, especially in today's digital age. Keyboard warriors are using it as a platform to post remarks without repercussions. Harish, is this something that we are, in a way, normalising?
There is this Malay saying, berani kerana benar. So if certain quarters feel they are entitled to post derogatory remarks, then they should be prepared to face the consequences. There are adequate laws in the country where the authorities can step in. Is this curbing freedom of speech? No, I think it's just curbing stupidity.
And finally, Harish, what can we do? What can Malaysia learn from the other clubs or the other leagues around the world to address this racism issue?
Racism is a worldwide issue, whether in football or in daily life. But just because it happens elsewhere, it doesn't give the racist handful here the license to do the same. Instead of learning from other clubs, why can't we just learn to treat each other like human beings? When it comes to sport, let's remember that the athletes play for the badge of the club, state, or even the country, not for their skin colour or creed.
That was 2213's Harish Dio giving us his thoughts on the recent incident of racist keyboard warriors in local football. Now on to our feature of the week, and one that brings us to the world of e-sport and professional competitive gaming. Much has been said about this booming industry and the potential it has to nurture a healthy competitive environment, but on the program today, we're going to be exploring the business side of the industry. Billions of dollars are poured into e-sport with a global audience of millions of fans. Apart from event organizers, esports teams and organizations are the ones that bring in the revenue, making it a sustainable ecosystem, all while keeping an eye out for the next world superstar. Malaysian esports organizations GigFam, founded in 2016 by Lim Kiat Kwang and Joseph Yeo, who together bonded over their love of games and sport. GigFam are one of the leading organizations, not just in Malaysia, but in the region. A team that has grown from strength to strength with multiple competitive teams in Southeast Asia across various games and platforms. Today on the program, I have one of the co-founders, Lim Kiat Kwang, who will give us an insight into what goes behind running a professional gaming team.
The story for it is a little bit funny. So there was my friend and I, Joseph, we play Dota, this game called Dota 2, together. And across the years, since uni days until, you know, all our working years, about until like 4 years ago in 2016, mm-hmm. we still play Dota. Mm-hmm. You know. So 4 years ago thereabouts, we were playing Dota one night, and we were on Skype talking to each other about Dota, right. And playing. Mm-hmm. And his wife passed by, and his wife was like, "Oh, you guys are playing Dota again?" And he then said to me, think spending a little too much time playing Dota. we need an excuse now on why we are playing Dota. So it was like, maybe we should start an esports team so we have an excuse. Yeah, and then suddenly on Skype, both of us just went quiet. And then we were like, okay, seems like we're really doing it, right? And that's how it started.
And do you guys still play to today?
Yeah, we still on and off play today. So we started since November 2016. So this is our fourth year for our esports organization. We have grown a fair bit in this past 3 to 4 years. So yeah, it seems like a lifelong passion turning into a lifelong business journey.
Exactly, that's what I want to talk about, because there's one thing to love the game and the industry, but you went a step further, you and Joseph, by, you know, investing, putting your money into it. It's a different ballgame altogether once you get into it. It's business after all, right? Why did you feel that starting GigFam was something profitable at the end of the day?
Well, I think to begin with, we definitely saw we were definitely very passionate gamers, and we know the games and the industry pretty well, in a sense. From a consumer point of view. Now, when we looked into it and we thought further and we asked ourselves a question, Joseph, do you think like in 20 years or 30 years time, you know, when we're 50 or 60 years old, do you think we'll still play a game? That's a question I asked him, and he asked me, you know, the same. And both of our answers were, yeah, we think so, in one form or another. Maybe not Dota 2, maybe by then it's Dota 4, 5 or Dota 10, who knows, right? Or it could be any other game. But we think that we would still be playing. And we looked around, like some of our little nephew or niece or you know, little cousins, they were all always like holding an iPad, playing games or playing games on a phone or something, one way or another, something. So to us, we think that this is a culture kind of thing. You know, it's a new form of entertainment, and this trend, it's sort of like a bit of a mega trend, and it cannot be stopped. It's just going to get bigger and bigger because the youth are getting older and older, and this is just entrenched within their lifestyle, their culture. This is the sports of this generation in a way, you know. That's what we think.
I want to talk a little bit about you mixing, I guess, your hobbies with work. Do you find that challenging in any way? Because your hobby now is basically work, right?
Fortunately and unfortunately, I guess. Because, actually, ever since we started this business, I think I've played a lot less, like a lot less. And it's common across a lot of people. Now, I think when we changed this from a hobby to become a business, it took on a very, very serious turn, because we told ourselves that it must not be just a passion project, a not-for-profit thing, because if we just keep losing money and just, you know, treating it entirely like a hobby, we believe that eventually our passion will just burn out.
Of course. Yeah.
So we have always been building this business in a very sustainable and organic manner. So far, we haven't taken any outside money, haven't taken any external investments, and we've been making it work by identifying talents, raw talents at a grassroots level, and bringing them up. So it's a combination of a hobby and a business, because we'll scout for players that we believe in, and we'll do qualitative like interviews with them, of course, checking on the quantitative, their stats, statistics and everything. And we sign them on, and some of our successful ex-players, former players, we have even transferred or sold them to famous and big esports organization. Even in North America, we had a six-figure deal in US dollars that we sold the player over. And actually, 1 year before that, when we first signed him on, he was considered a reject player in the whole region.
I see.
So,
just looking a bit into your Dota team, it is a Malaysian organization, but your Dota team now has 3 Filipinos and 2 Singaporeans. Is that right?
Indonesians,
that's right. Do you find it a challenge trying to find homegrown Malaysian talent?
Actually, not at all. So, in our previous iteration of our Dota 2 teams, it was mostly Malaysians, actually. Actually, this is the first season that we have had a situation that we didn't have Malaysians as a majority. In all the previous 3 seasons, it was usually a majority of Malaysians. So, some of the issues is that in the past, when we had a few very talented Malaysian players who we picked up as unknown players, We have then sold them on to other esports organizations within Southeast Asia or to China or to US. So some of our Malaysian players right now, our former US Malaysian players are playing in world championship teams in China, you know, top teams in Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. and we actually developed them and sold them there, actually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's the thing, right, about being the Malaysian identity, I guess. You want that to shine through your players as well. What are your thoughts on this?
Sure. I think that to us, Geek Fam, we started off in Malaysia. And I would say that we have most of our players, out of our 20 over professional players in Malaysia, I would say it's only the 5 of them in the Dota team that are non-Malaysian.
Got you.
The rest are all Malaysian.
That's
actually
great. Mm.
Yeah. So, but having said that, our belief is that games is meant to be a connector of the youth. So something I believe in is, like, for example, the aviation industry in these past couple of years, this past 10, 15 years, has brought people physically closer to each other. But to me, in Southeast Asia, where it's a melting pot of diversity, whether in terms of religion or economics or sociology all sorts of diversity, language and everything, in such a region, I believe that games has the potential to bring about better racial harmony or moderation and understanding between cultures. Because when you play a game, it doesn't matter who the other person is. You know,
that's true.
You're all on the same level playing field. You're starting all at level one. You know, and you're connecting to each other through a common love, common passion.
Mm.
So for me, it's like Geek Fam is supposed to be an embodiment of that, you know, the harmonious thing, you know, to connect people together, to be understanding and of each other, you know.
I want to talk a little bit about the stigma and the gap between esports and real sports, in inverted commas, I guess, has over the years, and I'm sure you noticed this as well, becoming ever closer. They almost go hand in hand now. You know, you hear of things of esports being in the ASEAN Games. You hear of big sporting teams like McLaren, Paris Saint-Germain, all getting on board, investing into esports, investing into their players. What are your thoughts on this?
To me, sports and esports, clearly, and physical exertion on sports is traditional sports are definitely a lot more strenuous. That's undoubted. Having said that, esports, I think a lot of times esports players have to be playing when they're playing competitively. Their heart rate goes up, metabolism goes up. There's a huge amount of mental strain as well sometimes,
mm-hmm.
And all this actually is, I think, similar in a way to perhaps chess, which also some people may argue it's not considered sport, you know, even though it's in the Olympics.
Mm.
Now, having said that, to me, sports has a place in the health of people, and esports has a place in terms of mental and social health as well. Across this number of years, of course, there's a lot of stigma. A lot of people may not understand that with esports, there is a good amount of mental and emotional strain as well. Now, I think it's a fair statement to say that physically it wouldn't be as strenuous, but it's definitely very competitive in terms of response rate, reflexes, and mental strength. You know, at the highest level, everyone is very talented in the game, but it's just about, like, how strong are they mentally and being in control of their emotions, you know, and how well they perform. I mean, it really affects them a lot.
Big companies jumping onto industry is definitely a good thing, but for yourself, you know, someone who runs the Geek Fam independently, are you worried at all that small big companies go in, they will monopolize the market? Are you worried about that?
I wouldn't think so, you know, actually. I welcome the news whenever big companies come in, actually. Just this morning, I was having a breakfast with one of Malaysia's largest companies, you know, and they just announced their entry into esports. So I was saying to the director that I was very happy that they were entering into it. Mm. And I think why that's the case is because, first and foremost, it adds a bit more legitimacy in a way, you know, that people are taking it more seriously. Like, you mentioned a couple of football clubs that are entering into esports, like Paris Saint-Germain, you know, even Manchester United is coming in, you know, there's a few more. To me, it's like with additional big companies coming in, it adds on legitimacy. Mm. Now, with a lot of these companies coming in, typically they will want to work with experienced organizations like us as well, who are very professional and being a bridge for them. Because right now, the esports industry, unfortunately sometimes, I would say that it's still a little bit of a cowboy town in a way. Some players are being abused, right. For example, be having very poor contracts. And at the same time, perhaps sometimes players who are still sometimes maybe very young, they may feel like, oh, I don't have to respect the contract or honor the contract. So it's not like football, right, where maybe a 16-year-old signs a contract and they know, oh, this is serious. I'm now bounded to the club or something like that.
Mm.
So all these things actually sometimes deter external parties entering the scene. Okay? Mm. So for me, we, GeekFam, are one of the largest and most experienced organizations in Southeast Asia. So, and I come from a little bit of a business, other business background, other corporate background. So I try to be a bit professional here.
Mm.
So what happens here is that a lot of times when big companies are looking to enter, they also would speak to us, actually, for us to act a bit as a bridge for them with, you know, the esports world and the business world, what makes sense, and for me to explain to them sometimes, you know. So we act as a bit of a bridge, as a bit of a consultant sometimes, and sometimes partner up with some of that.
Mm.
Like, for example, we are speaking to some of the world's largest football club right now as well, to maybe come into a partnership or whatnot. So these are just some of the things that I think is a benefit, actually.
That was Lim Kiat Kuang, the co-founder of GeekFam, one of the leading esports organizations in the region. More of that conversation coming up. Stay tuned. This is Bar None on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Today on the show, we've been speaking to Lim Kiat Kuang, one of the co-founders of GeekFam, one of the leading esports organizations in the region, whose love for the industry propelled him and took it to the next level by starting his own esports team. GeekFam today are not merely just a competitive team, they've also branched out to organizing esports tournaments with Geek events and also have been nurturing young, exciting talent with the Geek Academy. However, the esports industry is one that, in Kiat's words, is like a cowboy town with lawlessness, and for a growing new industry where anyone with the right resources and the right amount of money can get into the industry, kicked off the second part of the conversation by asking what makes a legitimate competitive gaming organization.
So I think it's prevalent across everything that you do as an esports organization, from the smallest to the biggest thing. So for example, on the smallest thing, it would be like player contracts. When we are about to sign up our players, we actually explain clause by clause what they are signing.
Mm.
Or in certain cases, when they are too young or they may not understand it very well, we actually bear the expense of having a neutral party explain the clauses to them, you know, in a law firm, having a lawyer represent them to understand each clause. So these are just some of the things that we have done to be professional about this.
Mm.
Yeah, or in certain cases, when they're too young, it's to speak to their parents, to explain to their parents as well and send it over.
Mm.
Now, that is just one of the small things that we do in terms of legitimacy. Other things is, of course, to, for example, even payment of salaries and prize money. Okay? So, like, we pay their salaries on time. And this is just another small thing that, you know, as a normal working adult, you take for granted sometimes. But in the esports world, unfortunately, especially in this number of years, there are so many incidences where an esports organization doesn't pay the salary or doesn't pay the prize money on time,
yeah.
And they just delay the players or even not pay the players in the end.
Mm.
So I think that doing those things across many years, a number of small things many years, you know, and helping the players build up their profile through our social media team. So we have a very strong social media team behind the scenes that helps them build their profile so they become influencers or celebrities in their own right. You know, these are just some of the things that our support system to add on legitimacy and professionalism in our day-to-day dealing as a sports organization.
Got you. Scoping a little bit out, and you're right about talking about, say, player contracts and salary issues. Those are prevalent issues in esports, so much so that players sometimes have to take the issue public, right? They post a tweet longer thread or a Reddit thread. Why isn't there like a governing body or player union body that just so that the whole industry can be more legitimate?
That's a very good question. So I think if we try to draw comparisons with other sports, for example, football, it has FIFA, which is perceived as the world regulator, the regulatory body for the world for football, right? And they could easily place a ban on certain clubs for, you know, doing certain things wrong. For example, financial fair play. UEFA has hit some big clubs fines or whatnot. Now, for esports, though, it's a little bit different sometimes because the games are sometimes different. So the question then begs itself is that, are you creating a regulatory body for each game to have one regulatory body? Are you going to have one regulatory body for the whole esports world? But if you have one regulatory body for the whole esports world, it's such a big world, such a diverse world. There's too many games. You've got to understand every game. And then what if the organizer or the club owner, and initially maybe he's in Dota 2, he cheats some of the players of their money, and then he jumps to another game. Mm. Like, you know, he jumps to, let's say, CSGO, Counter-Strike, or he jumps to Mobile Legends. And maybe the industry there doesn't know about his misdealings in the past. You know, and that happened.
Mm.
So I guess it's about how complex it is as generally in the landscape currently still. So actually some countries are trying to address this with their own esports association. You know, so like in Philippines they have a GAB, Games and Amusement Board. In various European countries they have their own esports associations, you know. All to varying degrees of success. So I think we haven't quite found a model, and that's why it's still Cowboy Town.
Cowboy Town, I love that term. So Kiat, tell me a little bit, you know, you run the day-to-day operations there, the organization. Bring us through your role. What do you do?
Wow, what do I do? Wow.
Everything.
I approve budgets. I talk to my social media team, come up with content plan. I do business development. I speak to sponsors. I talk to potential partners. I speak to various people, other esports organizations, sometimes to conduct corporate exercises. I also scout for players. I'm the one that set up the scouting system or the quantitative analysis of players. So I do that too. I deal with various software companies on analytical tools for our players. Yeah, these are just some of the things I do. I'm not sure how many more I do.
How about things, you know, like very minute things like cooking for the players? Do you do that too?
Oh, no, thank God. Thank God, no.
I want to touch upon something you talk about. So you set up these scouting networks in the team, right? Bring me through how that works, because, you know, for like normal, I guess more traditional sport, you can actually go, you know, visit the grassroots, visit other teams to try to, you know, scout for players. Yourself, do you sit in front of the computer and you look at stats, look at, you know, different anonymous players online? What's the process like?
Yeah, sure. So maybe I draw a bit of comparison in football.
Sure.
Like in UK, football scouts may go to futsal courts, may go to Sunday
league
morning
games.
Leagues.
Yep.
You know, and they watch those games and everything. So, actually, similarly, I do something similar, which is that I, for example, for Dota, I'll switch on Dota, go inside the game, and I see people playing. And the advantage is that I get to see many people playing, all in the comfort of my own house. I don't have to travel, you know. So I see all these people playing. I can even see it from their perspective, from that player's perspective. So I get to see where they're clicking, what they're doing, what they're, and because I understand the game as well, so I can understand what are they thinking, so their thought process of why their actions are like that. Apart from that, we have quantitative stuff as well, so we keep track of certain players, their statistics and everything, and then we observe for talent, you know, their skills, and from there, the next thing is then to start to communicate with them and fill them out in the sense of like doing a bit of qualitative interview. Having a bit of understanding, like this person, how competitive they are, how eager they are to learn, you know, what's their willingness to sacrifice to grow, and so on and so forth.
And most of the times, are these players just playing the game, or are they players from other teams?
I think most of the time, we try to scout total grassroots, like people who are not in a team, you know. But inevitably, sometimes, like while doing the scouting thing, while I'm watching another player, I'm watching player A, and maybe player B really excels in that same game, and he caught my eye, and I switched my attention to him, and it may turn out that this other player is from another. It's possible.
Right. You currently have teams for Dota, Mobile Legends, Bang Bang, PUBG, and also PUBG Mobile. Something I noticed, especially if you want to compare it to the formative years in the esports world, mobile gaming seems to be on the rise.
This is inevitable as our internet connectivity gets better and better, data is cheaper and cheaper. I think this is just inevitable, and smartphones are getting cheaper as well, you know. So in that way, accessibility to that form of equipment is the phone. It's a lot lower now. So accessibility is a lot higher, sorry. So yeah, and it also reflects in actually what we have been doing in this past 1 year. In this past 1 year, we have picked up another 8 teams, 6 of which are in Indonesia, 1 of which is in Philippines. And all 8 teams are actually... all 8 teams are actually all mobile games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Apart from managing the team and the day-to-day operations of GeekFam, you guys are also doing events under your division, Geek Events, right?
Sure, yeah.
You just hosted the PUBG C Super Cup tournament last weekend. How did that go?
Correct, that's right. So, yeah, we did the PUBG C Super Cup last weekend, and that was great. It was a... relatively successful tournament, apart from the fact that it was supposed to be a physical tournament, offline event.
Turned out to be online.
It turned out to be online, and the reason is very simple, because of the COVID-19
of course.
Situation, right? So, like, we have been, Geek Events have been appointed as the official main event organizer for PUBG across the whole Southeast Asia, including Taiwan, Hong Kong, Macau, for the year 2020.
Nice.
So what that means is that across 9 different countries, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Macau, Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, we are supposed to be organizing all their national tournaments, and the top of each country would then play in a regional tournament. So that regional tournament, whoever wins that will represent Southeast Asia, or what they call Asia-Pacific, to a global tournament.
Right.
So we are the organizers for Asia-Pacific.
Is there a bit of conflict of interest here? So if your own team competes in your own tournament, is that something that happens?
Yeah, that is something that does happen, actually. But because of how the game is being played, PlayerUnknown's Battleground, or PUBG, it's a battle royale game, similar to Hunger Games. Yep. So everyone is thrown on the island together, and they fight their way, right? So for survival and whatever not. So when that happens, it's all happening live at that same time. So because of that as well, the opportunity for us to actually, let's say, to collude is a little bit less.
Gotcha.
But on top of that, by being their official organizers, there's actually they have observers and they have referees that are direct from PUBG official to watch and oversee the whole tournament, and they are there throughout the tournament. So it's near impossible, and PUBG has never once said otherwise. In fact, they have outright said to me before that, you know, if anyone were to dispute, I would be asking them first thing is how can Geek Events actually collude,
right? Especially for PUBG, right? just the nature of the game.
Technology.
Yeah. GeekFam, business-wise, you have ongoing partnerships and sponsorship deals with guys like Predators, Xiaomi, HyperX. Were all these deals hard to secure?
I would say yes and no. I think the hard part is the initial part, just the initial part where we first get to know them. Mm. And a lot of times they are exploring to see how we can help them, you know, get their brand out a lot more.
Mm.
So I think that initially there was a lot of them are slightly unfamiliar with sponsoring an esports team or esports organization. But I think across the time, they have realized that the value of for money in terms of how they are going to get their brand, their product in front of millions of people, they have realized that esports is still relatively cheap. Mm. Still really, really cheap, actually, comparatively to other mediums.
Talking about the thousands of, I guess, esports teams on the planet, from an outside eye, in terms of success, there seems to be a huge gap, I guess, between, you know, the really top teams, talking like teams like Liquid, like Cloud9, to the next level, the mid-tier teams, and then there's everyone else, right? Talk to me why this is the case, and in terms of tiers, is it all just funding and investment? The more money you put in, the more successful you will become. Is that a false statement?
Okay, I think that having a good amount of money definitely helps. It's a definite advantage. But having said that, it's not the only criterion of success. I think in most businesses, that is the case as well. You need a base level of capital a lot of times. But once past that, it also depends on the team that you have built together, you know, on how far then this team can go. Now, there is very top teams, and these very top teams are typically the ones that attract the most amount of investment or the most amount of sponsorship deals and everything. And it is just supposed to be the way it is, you know. Like, for example, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, these are some of the biggest football clubs in the world. And they are the ones that attract the most amount of money to sometimes possibly an obscene tune of money, right? And so, but in like maybe the Division 2 and Division 3, it's like a big gap in terms of their wage bills for their players and everything.
Yep.
And it is actually the same over here as well. At the very top, they are attracting like 80-90% of the money. And some mid-tier teams are just attracting a small percentage of the money. And I think it's just a normal thing for business. And it's up to us to try to get there, you know, to try to get to be at the top.
What are some of the challenges in trying to scale up this ladder?
Well, right now in the esports world, partly because, like I said, it's a little bit of a cowboy town, a bit of lawlessness, a bit of unprofessionalism. One of the biggest challenges is that when we are very good actually at finding talent, like grassroots talent, so-called rejected players and everything. And a lot of times when we find them, a lot of other esports organizations go to them and tell them, hey, you know, join me, you know, I'll give you a bit higher salary and so on and so forth, you know, player poaching, that kind of thing. Because there's no regulatory body, and a lot of times these players, they're still like young and maybe less professional. They may break contracts. So sometimes it's like, sometimes when we achieve a moderate amount or good amount of success, there are a lot of teams that will come by and try to poach. So this is actually a big deterrent, big issue that will prevent some esports organizations from growing. Apart from that, for us as well, it's like the misunderstanding of esports or what can be done by some sponsors. So for example, I go to a sponsor and I speak to them, hey, do you guys want to sponsor an esports team or sponsor an esports event, or do you want us to help you organize an esports event? And they may go something like, oh, I did it before with this other organization,
right,
and it's really bad. The return is really bad, you know? And that happens, but the main issue could be that the event organizer or the esports team, they just weren't doing the correct thing for the sponsor. Or they just weren't doing anything in certain cases.
That
gives the rest of the esports industry a bad name.
Looking a bit at esports in Malaysia, famously, our former youth and sports minister, YB Said Saddiq, is very vocal about his support for the growth of the esports industry. Do you see things only getting better from now on?
Yeah, he has been very vocal about supporting the growth of esports. But I think it's more that it is a trend of which esports is naturally growing anyway.
Right.
Like sort of a bit of a mega trend that I mentioned earlier. So to me, this is just going to be ingrained in our culture, and it's just the tide is coming. It's whether we float above it and follow it, or we just get lost.
Mm. Have you been in touch, or are you connected to the government in any way in terms of support?
So far, GeekFam as an organization has never had any dealing with the government yet about these things. We have approached this entirely in a private manner.
Mm.
And yeah, that's how we've been doing it for the past 3 to 4 years.
And you guys have been running pretty well. So congrats to that.
Thank you.
Your Dota team and yourself too is going to be heading to LA pretty soon. Just qualified for the LA Major, which is a huge deal. Pits you against the best teams in the world. But other than that, what has been the organization's other highlights to date?
Well, I would say us expanding into Indonesia and Philippines towards the end of 2019 was a big highlight of ours.
Mm.
Like, because, for example, when we entered into Indonesia, we bought into a franchise league over there for Mobile Legends Bang Bang. That was the franchise league fee itself was $1 million just to enter the league.
Mm.
So that was a huge investment from us. And Indonesia is a very big market as well.
Mm.
So that's one of our highlights. I'll say us getting for Geek Events, the Asia Pacific main event organizer for PUBG or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is another big highlight moment for us in recent times. Us winning the SME 100 fast growing companies was another achievement that I'm very proud of from the team, since they achieved that relatively quickly and well. Now, apart from that, we have a few exciting projects that are coming, but unfortunately, I can't really share that yet.
Okay.
But I'm really excited to share that with everyone soon, hopefully.
That was Lim Kiat Kwang, one of the co-founders of GeekFam, one of the leading esports organizations in the region, as this week he gave us an insight to what goes behind the business of an esports team. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Bar None. Do remember that if you'd like to revisit the interview, you can head over to our website www.bfm.my/Bar None. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And also don't forget to download our latest app for free via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong. You have been tuning in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Join us again next week right here on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.